Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richmond brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year, or online for $15 a year, at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up! Because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia and the future of freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the future of freedom. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. The website is scotthorton.org. Streaming live here from 11 to 1 Texas time, noon to 2 Eastern at scotthorton.org and at noagendastream.com. Also at talkstreamlive.com. And you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /Scott Horton Show. All right, so first up today on the show is our friend Marcy Wheeler, Empty Wheel. She's called in the blogosphere because that's the name of her blog, Empty Wheel. It's at emptywheel.net. Welcome back, Marcy. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing great. I really appreciate you joining us on the show today.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about Bradley Manning. Now, I know you're not there actually covering the trial, but I do know that you're reading as much as you can about it and probably making more sense about it all than anybody else. So I guess could we start with celebrating the fact that he's actually getting a trial now after 3 years held without one?
Right. I mean, he's been in custody at times in illegal solitary confinement for 3 years. So he's been waiting a while for his day in court.
Now, I guess, how rare is it for someone to be held for so long without a trial? And then if this kind of thing does happen because of an oversight or some kind of mistake or a prosecution foot dragging or something, do people ever get set free for not really getting a speedy trial these days?
No, not really.
Or they just get one and so it's not really an issue or what?
No, and in this case, a significant amount of the delays came in the government trying to get a bunch of classified information to the defense. So, in other words, the delays came from the government's foot dragging on classified information, yet because they were able to tell the judge that it was all because it was a very complex case, they were able to foot drag. And behind everything, and behind even what we've seen so far at the trial, it's worth remembering that Julian Assange is still out there, and by all accounts or by all appearances, the government would like Bradley Manning to implicate Julian Assange. So keeping him in custody, and particularly keeping him as they did for about a month, month and a half, when was it? It was January of 2010, in solitary confinement when he didn't need to be. Keep in mind, all of that, you know, might help them to get Bradley Manning to implicate Julian Assange, which he has refused to do thus far.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the thing is, when they say they're trying to push this idea in his trial that he conspired with Assange, that before, I guess, you know, he says in his statement where he pleaded guilty to the facts of the case a little while back. He said that, well, he tried the Post and the Times, and he didn't hear back from them, so then he went to WikiLeaks, I think. I'm sure you understand it much more detailed than I do, but the government here is saying, at least in their opening statement, correct, that Assange really conspired with him and made him do it. Like, they're trying to put their case against Assange out there as part of their case against Manning in order to make, I don't know what, to smear Assange as not a journalist and to make Manning more guilty?
Well, they're doing a couple of things. One is they're trying to show that Manning was a conspirator with WikiLeaks. One of the things they're alleging is that he helped to edit the collateral damage video, which came out in April of 2010? I've lost track of time.
Yes, that's correct.
It was one of the first things that came out, right?
Yeah.
And so they're trying to say that because he edited that, which they haven't proven in court yet, it's not clear they can, but because he edited that, he was part of WikiLeaks and therefore kind of in a conspiracy with them. Another thing they're arguing is that that Manning went to a list of WikiLeaks' most wanted and gave them those documents. In other words, followed the directions of WikiLeaks. And then the most interesting thing, and apparently a pretty weak argument they're making, is that Manning started leaking information just 2 weeks after he got to Iraq. And that appears to be based on the existence, this is called the Guarani video, which is a video of an even bigger civilian massacre. And what appears to be happening, or what may be happening, is the government, there's another guy who got fired for issues relating to classified information. He, according to Adrian Lamo, had it on his computer and may have been the original leaker. And the government seems to be want to be arguing that Manning was involved in that earlier leak, which doesn't seem to make sense. So, in other words, the government is, Manning has already pled to lesser charges that would keep him in jail for 20 years. And so the big prize that the government has gone to trial to get is this aiding the enemy charge. So there's two things they want. They want the aiding the enemy charge. They want to depict this guy who gave you and me information we should have anyway as American citizens. They want to depict him as a traitor, as somebody aiding, and they're going to argue that because Osama bin Laden had the information that he was aiding Osama bin Laden, and he knew that. And then the other thing, again, is that they want to establish that Julian Assange was a spy and not a journalist, using, it should be said, the same arguments that they used in the James Rosen Fox Reporter case where he was cajoling people for certain kind of information. So it's an incredibly dangerous argument. Nevertheless, they're going to trial to prove it.
Right. Well, now, so what is the difference in the Risen case? Is it that Manning is a military guy and not a civilian? Well, the NSA, that's the military anyway, right?
Right. Yeah.
So there is no difference?
Oh, with James Rosen?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Risen, so I was thinking back to now the persecution of the whistleblower in that case. But that was a CIA guy, right?
No, it's hard to keep the Risens and Rosens apart. No, James Rosen is the Fox guy who leaked information on North Korea, or
right,
who reported information leaked to him on North Korea.
Right.
But in that case, to get a warrant, so to get the content of his emails with the alleged leaker, the government argued in a warrant that he was a co-conspirator in leaking classified information. And so they used the same argument there that they're using to try and implicate Julian Assange as a spy. And that's the dangerous argument. In spite of the fact that DOJ in the Rosen cases, as we speak, claiming to Congress they would never prosecute a journalist, they're still making these arguments in the Manning case that make it clear that they do want to prosecute journalists.
Right. I guess we should always use Bob Woodward as the standard, right? Because he's the mouth of Sauron. He's the guy that brings us everything official from, you know, whatever administration. If it's the Democrats in power, he says exactly what they want us to know. If it's the Republicans in power, he writes exactly what they want us to know. And he publishes all kinds of officially leaked, yet not declassified by the officials type data. So I guess that's really where we gotta, you know, use him as kind of the benchmark for what he's allowed to get away with and other journalists are not, even though the only real difference is he's dealing in official leaks and they're dealing in unofficial ones, which are not different under the law, only politically, right?
Well, they may be different under the law because the people who leaked to Bob Woodward are so senior. I mean, remember, he got leaked to in the Valerie Plame case, and certainly at least information on the NIE. And regarding that particular information, Dick Cheney basically told Spooner Libby that he basically insta-declassified it. And so I think the government would insist that everything they say to Bob Woodward is insta-declassified and therefore legal. But with regards to the Aiding the Enemy case, Osama bin Laden actually went after Woodward's books, and you know, wouldn't you too? Because they include this, they include very detailed information. One of the details that Woodward purportedly broke, it was in public court documents, kind of in classified form. Before that, was that the CIA is training a special forces in Afghanistan that works in the borderlands of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Highly classified CIA program, covert, covered under all sorts of, you know, secret rules. And Osama bin Laden got that from Bob Woodward's book, and yet the people who leaked to Bob Woodward that information are not being tried in the way Bradley Manning is. And significantly, and I think this detail just came out today, one of the things that was made clear today is that some of the documents Osama bin Laden allegedly got via WikiLeaks were these Afghan cables, these Afghan, they're not cables exactly, but they're daily reports of events in the field that actually get pretty old pretty quickly, so they're not all that sensitive. But more importantly, in today's testimony, it became clear that actual sources, the people that you need to protect the identities of, people who are considered credible and reliable, those are protected. They're only referred to by number. And so whereas Bob Woodward leaked highly classified, highly compartmented information, I mean, it was leaked via Bob Woodward to Osama bin Laden. What we're talking about in Bradley Manning's case is he was leaked dated information that remained coded when Osama bin Laden got it. That's the difference.
Yeah. Well, you know, Obama even said, an activist asked him, well, what about Daniel Ellsberg, right, trying to trick him into being a Democrat and condemning Ellsberg, right, who every Democrat wants to put on Mount Rushmore for helping to end the Vietnam War or whatever. And Obama's response was, well, those were classified differently. Yeah, differently. Top secret. This stuff was right. Just regular secret and confidential. What a joke.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can credibly argue that what Ellsberg leaked was less damaging if you buy the classification standards than what, I mean, I think one of the things I find most interesting about the State Department cables is reading between State Department skepticism. So, there are a couple of times when the State Department will say something and it's clear they're not read into the big secrets and they go, yeah, this is clearly bullshit. And that's when but I mean, the State Department doesn't deal as often in those top secret secrets that Woodward gets leaked, that Ellsberg leaked, that, you know, and Manning, there are two main levels of network. So there's the SIPRNet, which is what he was alleged to have leaked from, and there's JWICS, which is a much higher level of classification. And he will testify, his defense will testify over the course of this trial, that he purposely didn't touch anything from JWICS, which are the same kinds of secrets that Ellsberg leaked, because he didn't want to do that kind of damage. He leaked the lower classification stuff that should in no way be that damaging.
Right. Yeah, he explained that in his testimony, right, that he was very careful about what he leaked and didn't for just those reasons. He did not that he didn't want to be accused of compromising sources and methods. He did not want to compromise sources and methods. He did not want anyone to get hurt by this. He only was trying to help.
Right.
And so he was careful in the first place to leak it that way.
Right, exactly.
Which explains why no one was hurt, because he was really careful about what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did a post some time ago, the one of the last arguments that they argued pre-trial was who and how many of the government's witnesses can testify in classified form. And they're going to have, for example, one of the Osama bin Laden SEALs testify completely in classified form. They're going to have a CIA guy whose name has already been published, testify entirely in secret. But one of the more interesting people they're going to have testify is the guy who was ambassador to Yemen in 2009-2010 who wrote some of the most damning cables, in that they revealed that Yemen was lying and claiming credit for our drone strikes, They provided a lot of circumstantial evidence that we tried to kill Anwar al-Awlaki in 2009 when we didn't have any operational intelligence on him. They provide evidence about what we pretended to know about the al-Majalla massacre in December of 2009 that killed a Bedouin tribe. So they're really damning. And the government wants to have this guy testify in secret as to the harm that these leaks purportedly did. And so, you know, you put 2 + 2 together, and it seems very likely that they are going to argue in secret that Manning harmed U.S. security because he revealed that the government in Yemen, that the U.S. government in Yemen are lying about who's responsible for killing all these Yemenis, which was already well known by the time he leaked it. I mean, by the time nobody had any illusions that Yemen had developed a sophisticated air force.
Right.
No one had any illusions about that. But nevertheless, the fact that Manning allegedly leaked this information that made us, you know, that gave us all proof of this, that's the harm. That's the kinds of arguments that the government is going to argue about harm.
Yeah, I know for a fact on that particular story that Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com in November, December 2009 was covering all of those drone strikes and, you know, reporting about how the Yemeni government was claiming responsibility for them and how not believable that was. Since obviously CIA and JSOC were running around
in real time, and you knew in real time that the government's arguments about civilian casualties were bogus.
Right.
And yet that's the harm that they're going to argue. That's their big case, that this harmed national security.
Well, now, so, okay, if we, help me understand here. If it wasn't Barack Obama and the unprecedented war on whistleblowers, more than twice as many persecuted whistleblowers as all other presidents in American history combined, but what if this was still just the friendly old George W. Bush years? How far out of proportion is the persecution of Manning here? If it wasn't, you know, a whole new day for going after whistleblowers, would they, basically everything that he's pleaded guilty to, he would have been prosecuted for that no matter what, and it's just all this aiding the enemy stuff is the ridiculous add-on charges?
Well, they never argued aiding the enemy. I think had they had their way, they would have gone after James Risen. So they would have gone after a journalist if they could find a way to do it, but ultimately I think they weren't able to, in part because any evidence against him would have come from the illegal wiretap program that he exposed. And it's a lot harder to go after James Risen for exposing all these illegal programs. I mean, Manning clearly exposed illegal actions, but, you know, they're among this ocean of just really corrupt action that.
And we should say Risen, he's a New York Times reporter who did some groundbreaking work on the CIA basically handing ready-made nuclear bomb blueprints over to the Iranians.
Right.
Just for people who aren't that familiar. That's why he can get away with a little bit more, as he works for the newspaper of record, which is a little bit different than being a specialist in the Army.
Right. Well, and they've gone after his source for the Iran story, but they, you know, they didn't prosecute Thomas Tam, who by his own admission was one of the sources for the illegal wiretap story. And I think in that case, I mean, and here's the thing, and you know, ultimately the way our government keeps secrets is with this completely arbitrary tyranny, really, of secrecy, in that the government, and particularly the president, ultimately the president claims he's got unfettered control over what is secret and what is not. And so ultimately the president can make completely arbitrary decisions about which leaks are worth pursuing and which aren't. And a lot of them never get prosecuted because the secrets themselves are so sensitive to prosecute them. And I suspect that's what happened with the illegal wiretap program. Because to prosecute those leaks, you'd have to get around the argument that they're illegal. And, you know, so to some degree, Manning was screwed because he didn't leak classified enough material, which probably would have protected him. But then the other thing is, and we just got information on this today, is that, you know, DOD's Inspector General is sitting on this report showing that Leon Panetta, at a big celebration for the Osama bin Laden killers, basically leaked top secret information while probably Catherine Bigelow was president, or Mark Bull, one of the two Zero Dark 30 people, while they were present.
Mm-hmm.
Leaked it to Hollywood movies, you know, Hollywood producers.
He was the head of the CIA at the time.
What's that?
He was the head of the CIA at the time.
He was head of CIA at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then that would be one of those cases where they say he can declassify it just by saying it if he wants to, and then after the fact say, right, President Obama, and then that's it, right? And he gets to get away with that scot-free?
Yeah, and I'm sure that's what happened because, you know, of course the government wanted, we only know, I mean, the government wanted this movie out there, wanted their self-serving narrative of the Osama bin Laden raid out there in time for the election. And so we only know about it because Peter King, the Long Island congressman, requested this this investigation. But DOD's inspector general is still sitting on it, has been sitting on it at least since December.
Mm. And now, so what all did you find out in there other than was that the big news? Was that one leak at the party or whatever?
Yeah, that's the big news. Top secret information Panetta made available to, again, it's not clear whether it's Bigelow or Bull. But, I mean, that plus the fact that DOD's IG has been sitting on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, so what about the future of reporting here? Because I hear a lot of talk about a chilling effect and government sources are a lot more afraid than before. I don't think they ever used to have impunity in or out of the military to tell anything, you know, unauthorized leaks to speak in an unauthorized way to reporters. But somehow they got away with it a lot easier before than nowadays. And now journalism has changed, has been changed, you know, lately. Even people talk about even just in the Obama years, much less the Bush years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, at least in my opinion, a lot of people who used to be very good journalists are telling a lot more stories that don't even include the obvious counter narrative. I don't know, none of them will admit to it. None of them.
Oh, yeah, isn't that nice? Check, check. Well, sorry, Marcy. Well, technology got the best of us on that one, but that was the great Marcy Wheeler from EmptyWheel.net.
Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill, and they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click Donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Admit it. Our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to a dollar a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
So you're a libertarian and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up, turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner. Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right. It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.